This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is The Morning Run. I'm Chuang, joined by Wong Xiaoning. And in about 35 minutes or so, Xiaoning, I'm going to be talking to a lady from Korea named H.S. Chung. Now, she's the cluster lead for Hill & Knowlton Strategies Asia on The Breakfast Grill. And it's interesting, the story, because Hill & Knowlton is one of the international PR firms, and they've teamed up with the Malaysian PR company Lumos PR, part of the ASEAN growth strategy. And they'll be trying to help Chinese companies that are trying to regionalize into ASEAN in their international marketing directions.
What is a cluster lead, Chua?
The cluster lead, I presume, is a team leader of some repute and standing.
It's a new fancy title.
Yes, it is, yeah. But they'll be all revealed in 35 minutes' time on The Breakfast Grill. Now, this item from Moody's. They've issued a negative global outlook for sovereigns in 2020, and they've named disruptive political environments as worsening credit challenges. They are saying that in 2020, it's going to be a negative outlook. It's reflecting their expectations for the fundamental conditions that will drive sovereign credit over the next 1.5 years.
Now, the starkest manifestation, of course, of this impact of the geopolitical tensions is the disruption to trade, mainly resulting from the standoff between the US, which has a AA stable rating, versus China, which has an A1 stable rating. But overall, the point is the global environment is becoming less predictable for the 142 sovereigns that they rate. And this is about $63 trillion in debt outstanding. So this report is significant because it's basically warning everybody it's going to be a little bit tougher times ahead in 2020.
Okay, so to get more on this, we will speak to Marie Duren. She's the Managing Director for the Sovereign Risk Group at Moody's Investor Service. Marie, your latest report cites the disruptive and unpredictable political environment and causes that will lead to a gradual slowdown in GDP. Would the resolution of these China-US trade tensions even partially go some way to alleviating these prospects?
At the moment, we think that the issues and the tensions between the US and China really reflect deep-rooted differences in views about the role of the two economies in the global system and the way they are run, and in particular issues to do with technology and property rights. So whilst the negotiations are focused on trade policy, we don't expect that a potential partial agreement would resolve the deeper issues. And as such, there could be, even after an agreement now, there could be renewal of tensions in the future. That matters because then that means that the longer this goes on, the more companies start to integrate this atmosphere and environment of tensions in the decisions. And we're already seeing investment, in particular in Asia, starting to fall. So the first impact has been on exports, and now that seems to be moving towards investment. And that means that the implications of these tensions between the US and China are quite broad-based on the two countries, but also on the rest of the region through exports and investment.
Now, the report also highlights the risk of economic and financial shocks increasing in 2020. So which are the regions or countries you think are most susceptible?
So there are various possible shocks facing sovereigns ahead. For Asia, trade is, of course, a source of shock. We have made assumptions about further slowdown in global trade. This could still prove optimistic, and in particular, the response of the companies, as I described, could be more pronounced than we currently assume. So for economies that rely on trade, like Malaysia, Taiwan, Thailand, or Vietnam, this could be a source of shock. For other sovereigns, we do see political and policy unpredictability as a potential source of shock. And around the world, we observe that there's a growing resentment against the perceptions of stagnant living standards, and that has given rise to protests in a number of countries and some political upheaval in some cases, and that could remain a source of shock for some. And last, I would mention financing conditions as a potential source of shocks. While global interest rates are very low, and we do expect them to remain low, Individual sovereigns are not immune to a potential change in financing conditions and the sudden widening of spreads and increasing the cost of debt. When investors start losing confidence in the credibility of policies, that matters for sovereigns that tend to be frontier markets. In Asia, it would be countries like Pakistan, Sri Lanka, or Mongolia, maybe, that rely on foreign financing and that rely on really continued confidence from investors in the credibility of their policies.
Marie, low interest rates and loose monetary policy are features that you see continuing next year. This is an environment that hampers the pace of reforms needed to remove impediments to growth. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So, what low interest rates provide an immediate relief in that it frees up some of the government's revenue to be potentially available for other areas of spending than an interest bill. In practice, what we observe in a number of countries is that it's also low interest rates tend to remove a sense of urgency and a sense of need for further fiscal consolidation. So the overall credit implications of the low interest rate environment are really not only the immediate relief and the reduction in interest rate bill, but also how then that is being used by governments to how the spending is then reallocated, or maybe how fiscal consolidation is proceeding. In the case of Asia, what we seem to observe for now is that there is a focus on supporting growth, and so some governments are using fiscal policy to do that. We've seen measures in the budget for Malaysia, for instance, that was announced recently. Korea is embarking on quite significant fiscal stimulus. In some cases in Asia, we do think that governments start from a relatively strong fiscal position. That is the case of Korea. In the case of Malaysia, there is less space to embark on an expansionary fiscal policy. So we are observing what the trend of fiscal policy will be in that environment that is really both a combination of relatively low interest rates, but also low growth that is compressing revenue for governments.
That was Marie Deron, Managing Director of the Sovereign Risk Group at Moody's Investor Service. And I think what she had said about Malaysia is quite appropriate because Malaysia's rating is gunpowder on all fronts, right? Monetary policy that continues to be accommodative and perhaps trending lower. And over 50 billion ringgit in development expenditure funds ready to be deployed at any point in time.
But she does warn that our room to manoeuvre is much less, right? We are unlike Korea, which has a lot more fiscal space to actually roll out more stimulus packages. Bear in mind, our fiscal deficit targets still remain for 2021, 2022. We need to narrow that. Otherwise, the sovereign rating agencies, like the likes of Moody, might actually downgrade us if we don't keep that fiscal discipline.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.